And also I did moonlighting. We're allowed during our range retreat to take a few days off if it's a really important invitation. So last month I received an invitation to give a keynote address at a conference in Korea, which I accepted because it was weird. The conference where I gave the keynote address to about 1,200 people in this big conference center was the 2015 World Computer Conference. So I am computer expert. I am the IT monk. People from Google and Samsung and LG were all there, hanging on every word. So it's amazing how you can actually go and give a keynote address and people think it's wonderful when you don't know a word what you're talking about. But the reason you go there is because you can actually inspire and see things in a totally different way. But I told them a little story, which from a long time ago, I think in the 1908 or somewhere around then, World's Fair was held in St. Louis, United States. And like any World's Fair, they were selling all types of food. And it just happened by fortuitous chance that the ice cream stall was situated right next door to the stall selling waffles. And you might think, what has waffles to do with ice cream? Or what has ice cream to do with waffles? But because they were next to each other for a couple of weeks, they talked to each other, they became friends, and they decided to try and combine their products. And that is where we got the ice cream cone from, the St. Louis World's Fair, the fortuitous coming together of waffles and ice cream. So, who knows, the coming together of Buddhism and computers, who knows where that might lead. And that is why it is great to actually to think outside the box, look outside the box, and perhaps that's one of the reasons, you know, why you do get invited to go to many, many different places. And you wonder, what is a Buddhist monk doing there? Because the last week, and the reason why I came late, and please excuse me, I have to leave almost immediately after the talk finishes, because I'm also teaching a meditation retreat for my Singaporean disciples over at Jhana Grove. Finishes tomorrow afternoon, and they stay over for our Katina ceremony afterwards. And I was telling to them all the very interesting things I get up to in my life as a Buddhist monk. And I told them the story that there was one of our members here. Now, people come from all walks of life in this Buddhist center here in Nolimara, and this person was a radio producer on 6PR. And he was listening to me, and he said, Ajahn Brahm, you know, you're much better than these bozos I have to employ going on the radio. You'd be great on talkback radio. Do you want to give it a try? And I'm just up for anything, just about. So I said, yeah, why not? But I'm really busy. It's very hard to come all the way from Serpentine, you know, into town just to do a radio show, then go back again. And I said, why not just after a Friday night? Because I'm here anyway. After the talk is finished, I can go to East Perth and go to the studios and do a show there. I said, great. So one evening, after giving the talk here, I quickly went into a car, went into East Perth, into the studios at 6PR, and of course, as usual, you were late. So I never had any chance for invitations or doing anything, just straight into the studio, straight with the headphones on, in front of the microphone, the red light was on, immediately I sat down, we were on air. And first of all, I always remember this, because the producer knew me, but the presenter, you know, he looked at my name and said, how do you pronounce that? Because you may be very careful. Once when I gave a talk at Mercedes College, you know, the girls' school in town, I saw some of the girls the day afterwards in town. They passed me and said, "Oh, you gave a talk at our school yesterday." I said, "Wow, you remember me?" He said, "Yes, we'll never forget anyone whose surname is Bra." And I said, "There's an M on the end, Brahm." These are teenage girls. They will stir you up if they possibly could. So anyway, they called me Mr. Monk. So I was Mr. Monk. And then they did the introductions. Here's Mr. Monk, who comes from the Buddhist temple over in Nolamara. And the other person who is on this talkback show, I'll always remember her, was a woman called Dr. Gabriel Morrissey, author of so many books on sex. And at that point, I got a bit scared. What show am I on? And it was a show on adult themes, where people from the general public will ring up with all their problems in that area of life. What on earth was I doing on this show? But it was one it was one of these shows where the person would ring up and they would say who they were and who they wanted to talk with. Now, can I put this question to Dr. Morrissey, the expert? She's actually an Australian expert on these things. Or to Mr. Monk. And for the first 5 minutes, it was 50-50. We've got equal calls. And after that time, for the next hour and 50 minutes, it was a two-hour show, all the calls came to me. They soon realized who the expert was. And I've been a good monk for 40 years. And I always wonder that experience. Why is it that as a Buddhist monk, you can answer questions on something, you know, you have to go back so many years before you were a monk to remember what it's all about? And the reason is, again, it's just because you're outside the box. You can see things from a different angle than the experts can. And that is actually so important. It's one of the reasons you come here. I talk about your life, but I don't have a job. I don't have to go to work on a Monday morning like you guys. Actually, I go to work Saturday morning, Sunday morning, Monday morning, Tuesday morning, Wednesday morning, Thursday, Friday. I work 7 days a week. Even just this retreat time, I was working like anything. You know, I was telling someone today, you know, this is my 65th year. I should, by Australian customs, be retiring at the end of this year, next August. But you guys won't let me. I think that's really unfair. So I'm going to start a union for monks. There's people like Kevin Reynolds around here, the CFMEU, Construction Forestry Monks, an engineering union. So, but anyway, monks don't need to retire, but nevertheless, you can actually get a good understanding of people's lives. And that's why, you know, the talks and the books which I write really do very well in the world. Somehow or other, you can understand where people are at and give them good solutions to everyday problems. And that is why you come here. Your problems, not some airy-fairy idea of what Buddhism is, which is intellectual, which you can read in a book, but how we take these incredible teachings and actually put them into practice in your lives. And so the real subject of the talk this evening, which I wanted to focus on, is problems. What is a problem? Because, again, this evening, you know, coming in late because I had to give a talk to the Singaporeans this afternoon, this is my third talk today. So, having given a talk, getting in the car, coming up the freeway, it was congested, you know, rush hour traffic. And, you know, it was going to be late. Who cares? Because monks are never late. Sometimes you are too early. And doesn't matter, you can't do anything about it. You're in the traffic, so I just enjoyed it. Because I knew what was going to happen to me as soon as I come here, people lining up to get the book signed, asking questions, say hello, you know, all sorts of stuff. And I thought, the more minutes I'm stuck in the traffic, the less minutes I'll have to talk to you guys. Ah, freedom. So I have learned from my life, you know, that if there's nothing you can do about it, just relax and enjoy it. And it is, what is a problem? And the essence of this story, what is a problem, comes from something I remember so many years ago. I think I was still at university. Actually, it was before then, because it was a war in the Middle East. In 1966, 67, the Six-Day War, somewhere around that time. It was called the Six-Day War between Israel, it was Jordan, Syria, Egypt, and all the other countries around there. I don't know exactly which countries, but it's supposed to be a Six-Day War, but people say it hasn't stopped. But at the time, during the middle of that conflict, when there were tanks blowing each other up, and bullets flying all over the place, and bombs going off. I always say, if you ever give a talk, always do some dramatic gestures. Bombs going off, bullets going everywhere, because sometimes people come to public talks, they fall asleep. So I always do gestures. So anyway, there was a big war going on. And this, I think he was just retired as a Prime Minister of England, this fellow called Harold Macmillan, this old guy. And he was interviewed by the media. They wanted to get some advice, suggestions by someone who'd been there, done it, and had experience. And they asked him, "Sir, as a former Prime Minister of UK, what do you think of the problem in the Middle East?" And without any hesitation, this statesman replied, "Sir, there is no problem in the Middle East." And the journalist was dumbfounded. "What do you mean, no problem in the Middle East? Don't you read the papers?" I always remember I heard a quote from Mark Twain. If you don't read the newspapers, you are uninformed. If you do read the newspapers, you are misinformed. And you might call that the ABC or whatever. I'd better be careful. But he said, "Haven't you read the newspapers? There's a war going on. People are dying. People are losing their homes. What do you mean there's no problem?" And this great Prime Minister, statesman, he replied, and I remember this, and I've been practicing this ever since. He said, "Sir, a problem is something with a solution. There is no solution in the Middle East, therefore it can't be a problem." Now that was a very powerful statement. It meant, if there's nothing you can do about it, if there's nothing you can see, there's no possibility that you can make a positive difference to it, it's not a problem. Because if you make these problems about things you can't do anything about, what happens? You waste your energy, you waste your time, and things you can do something about, you neglect. And that is a problem. We worry about so much stuff we can do nothing about. So, your past. Is your past a problem? What someone said to you, what they did to you, they abused you, they cheated you, is that a problem? Can you do anything about it? If you can, yes, it's a problem. If there's a solution, yes, it's a problem. But if there's no solution, then is it a problem? Of course not. Which means you can live a much more peaceful life and only worry about things where you can make a difference. Our problems in life, we worry about so much we can do nothing about. And what happens? Then we become a problem for the poor people who have to live with us. So, please remember, a problem is something with a solution. If there's no solution, it's not a problem. Relax. Or rather, put your attention on something which you can do something about. And that makes you less of a frustrated, angry, irritated, disappointed person, and you become far more effective in this world. And that's even what the Holiness the Dalai Lama said about the future. Why do you make a problem of the future? Do you worry about the future? Can you do anything about that problem? If you can do something about the future, then worry about it. If you can't do anything about the future, whatever the problem it is, then don't worry. This is wonderful. So the doctor said, you know, you've only got a year to live. Definite, certain. If it's certain, you don't have to worry about anything. Great, thank you so much. Why not? Because if you are too healthy, I think somebody said this and I really agreed with them, if you really make yourself too healthy, you know, exercise, eat healthy food, what does that mean? It just means an extra couple of years in the old people's home. So, if you're healthy, great. But don't worry about it if you're not. So, if you can do something about it, great. If you can't, great. That's even better. So a problem is only something with a solution. If there's no solution, stop worrying about it. And you know, people just cause so much anxiety, so much problems worrying about things they can never do anything about whatsoever. If you can, then great, get down and do it. Be effective. But also, people make problems of things which they don't deserve to be called problems. And I was talking to the monks about this during the Range Retreat, which is why it came up. Because an old story I read in another book again a long time ago, because it was somebody else's story. I couldn't really repeat it in one of my books, but it was a brilliant story. It was about a backpacker. Just maybe 10 years after the Second World War, in the late 50s or early 60s, and he was an American, he was traveling around Europe, and the backpackers like today, you know, you'd stay in cheap accommodation with friends, meet lots of new friends and people, and you get simple jobs wherever you can get some work, you know, picking strawberries, or in this particular case, washing dishes in a restaurant. So there he was, washing dishes in a restaurant, which is a great job for a backpacker because you get free food, you know, and a bit of money to pay your rent and save up for the next leg of your journey. So there he was, washing dishes in this restaurant in Vienna, in Austria. And one day the owner of the restaurant called all the staff together and said, I've got an announcement for you. There was some mistake, I don't know who's responsible, but we've had a delivery of sauerkraut, this pickled cabbage which German people love. Sauerkraut. And he said, we've got so much, I have to get rid of it. So for the next 3 weeks, if you want free food, it has to be sauerkraut. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, I don't care. If you want sauerkraut, it's for free. Everything else you have to pay for. And this American got very upset and angry. They can't do this to us. We've got our rights. You know, it's understood. You work in a restaurant, you get free food, not sauerkraut. I don't like sauerkraut. I'm an American. I'm not a German. Why are they doing this to us? It's unfair. You can't do this. He was very angry, as you can imagine people would be. And at that point, the cook came out and took this young man aside and said, young man, I am now going to tell you the difference between an irritation and a problem. And this old cook continued by saying, about 12 years earlier, he was in Auschwitz, in the concentration camp. Every morning he got up, many of his friends and relations and loved ones were taken away. He wouldn't see them again. And he didn't know which morning he would be chosen and taken away to be killed. And he said, young man, living in Auschwitz is a problem. Eating sauerkraut is only an irritation. And what a beautiful story that is. Why is it that many of the things in life which really belong in the category of irritations, you know, what your husband said to you. It's just an irritation, that's all. It's not a problem. He's not going to gash you or tonight.
I don't know. Who knows? Anyway,
no. So you're safe. You're going to live. Or, you know, just the Eagles losing in the grand final. That's an irritation. That's not a problem. So many times we confuse a problem with an irritation, irritation with a problem. And we amplify these things out of all proportion, which means we can't let it go. So when we keep things in perspective, all the difficulties you've had this week, whatever they were, like being caught in a traffic jam. Like, you know, we had a couple of weeks ago, because we've been, you know, well, the monks haven't been doing much work, but I have been sort of teaching a lot. All the tools in our workshop were all locked up. And when one of the monks went to check on them, they were gone. Some thief had come into our workshop and stolen our chainsaws and generators and all sorts of other stuff. Is that a problem? Number one, there's no solution. No one will be able to find them, wherever they've gone. So there's no solution. It's not really a problem. And anyway, come on, it's an irritation. It's not really a problem, is it? Is that going to kill you? In fact, many of the monks are probably very happy they don't have to work so hard. You always look on the bright side of things, and you always think, whoever got those chainsaws and other stuff, may they be happy and well. May they get as much fun out of them as we have. Because it reminds me of this guy who used to come here. He was actually one of our caretakers a long time ago. And a really long time ago, maybe 35 years ago. And he was one of these young men who never wanted to be tied down, you know, an Australian. So, you know, you know, he had girlfriends, but would never commit. And he'd have a job, but then leave it after, you know, 6 months or a year. And he liked Buddhism, Hinduism, so he'd go and stay in all the temples, help out for 6 months, and go somewhere else. And the only possession he had, which he was really attached to, was his Harley Davidson. He has an incredible, beautiful bike, really expensive, because some of these bikes cost way more than a car. And it was his Harley. That's what he was really attached to. I mean, Lynn, she will probably remember him. But, you know, after a while he left, and he told me this story. He was actually in Melbourne or Sydney. And he was helping out in some temple over there. And he went to get some groceries from the supermarket. So he parked his Harley in one of these, you know, multi-story car parks. He went to get his stuff. And when he came back, he found his Harley had been stolen. The bay was empty. And that was the only possession he had in his life. The only thing he loved and cared for, his Harley. He had no house, no much real money in the bank. It was his Harley. And his Harley Davidson gave him the freedom to travel wherever he wanted, whenever he wanted. And he can just, if he felt like he would just, you know, leave Sydney and go up to Brisbane or go to Darwin, go bush. It was a ticket to freedom, and some lowlife had stolen it. But he'd been coming here. So the shock gave way to anger, and then anger, he said, no, come on, that's not going to help. Let go. So he let go of the only thing he really loved and cared for. And he told me, he wrote this letter, he said, and then he thought of the person, probably some drug addict or something, you know, who needed the bike to sell to get some money for more drugs. He said, may whoever took this bike have as much joy and fun as I have had, you know, being with it. May he also have the opportunity maybe to go into the bush and travel around and enjoy this bike as much as I have. May he be happy and well. And he was so proud of his Buddhist response to be able to let go. It was not a problem, he couldn't do anything about it, you never find it again. And he actually let it go and wished the thief well with the bike. And he told me he felt so proud that he was a real Buddhist. He didn't really sort of feel angry at the thief, and he never sort of wanted to catch him and beat him up. He never felt sad, oh poor me, why does this happen to me? His response was beautiful. And as he was feeling so proud of himself, then he noticed he was in the wrong level of the car park.
he went down to the correct level and there was his Harley untouched.
He said it was a test and he passed with flying colours. He did actually let go. And what a wonderful thing that was. You know, he could give it up. It's not really a problem. So all that possession, what are those possessions there for? To give you happiness and peace, not to give you more worries and trouble. Oh my goodness. Well, for your convenience, not for your stress. So you look after them, but if things happen and someone pinches them, it's not a problem because you can't do anything about it. And the very most, it's an irritation. And sometimes you do get things stolen. It's wonderful. You don't have so much stuff in your house because people these days, I've seen these, they have these storage places, you know, where you can store all your excess stuff. So you've got too much stuff. So the burglars are doing you a favor. So some of you, instead of having a garage sale, just put a sign up, burglars, this way please. free stuff. But anyway, sometimes we get so stressed out in modern life when we don't really need to, because we often think that this is really important and it's not that important. And a lot of times you can't do anything about it, so just let it go. There's no solution. Yeah, you can spend time looking for a solution, thinking about it, what can be done, what can we do about this, even if it's really, really, really hard. But if there's no solution, then leave it alone. And especially these days, because apparently that the economy is not going so well and people are losing their jobs. Losing your job, is that a problem? Is it? Has it got a solution? So what is the solution? Too many people come to me and say, oh, I've lost my job. I don't know how I'm going to get another job. He said, I know an organization which can employ you and give you 100% job security. They'll never sack you. Become a monk. Become a nun. That's one thing I've got. I've got job security. I'm never going to get sacked. Maybe if I keep telling bad jokes, I might, but I don't think so, maybe. Do you want a bad joke? Okay, you asked for it, okay. I told this to a couple of girls earlier. This comes from Burr, you know, your sister. It wasn't from Burr, this was from Venerable Chanda, sorry. What did the pirate say on his 80th birthday? What did the pirate say on his 80th birthday? And the answer is, aye, matey. Aye, matey. If you didn't get that, go back to school. But solutions. And if there is a solution, get it. If not, relax and enjoy yourself. Because sometimes when you have that freedom, sometimes people, they work too hard and they complain they're stressed out. They've got no time for their family. They've got no time for their spiritual life. They've got no time to read. They've got no time for anything because they're working so hard. And then you get sacked, you get retrenched. Your wish has come true. Now you can relax. Now you can catch up with your reading. Now you can visit your family. Now you can go on that holiday, wherever you want to go. And why can't you do that? Sometimes because people have got too many debts. Why have you got debts? You got too big a house, too big a car. Downsize. Which is a wonderful thing in today's world. I often say this to people, that some people's houses are so huge. I still remember going, it's a great story, absolutely true. I went to this person's house in Shelley. It was quite a wealthy Thai lady. She wanted her house blessed. Got there from Serpentine. First thing I needed to do was to go to the toilet. I said, how do you get to the toilet? Honestly, she drew me a map. She didn't say it's over there. Go down the corridor, turn left, and the first right, and the second left. It was such a huge house. It was a mansion. And then after I went to the toilet, returned, I asked, it's a big house. This. How many people live here? And she said, just me. So why don't you have any friends or relations here? He says, because my relations are always asking me for money. Same with my friends. I'm too scared of them. That's why I live here alone. And I thought, that what type of life is that? A huge mansion is a prison for her. She's got no friends, no happiness at all. And sometimes, if you could downsize, live more simply, you have many more friends. Because, I mean, what's a house for? It's not to impress others, but a nice place where you can live with the people you love and like. So sometimes people, if they have difficulty financially, there is a solution to that. Downsize, live more simply. Look at the monks. We live so simply. I don't even have a mobile phone. I'm very proud of that. That's one of the reasons I get good meditation, because that damn phone does never ring. And you're not that important. You have to be rung up all the time. So anyway, just downsize, live simply, use simple clothes. You don't need to be fashionable. I've been noticing the last 3 months, because people have been coming to, you know, give us food in the monastery, and all these young ladies have been wearing jeans, you know, with frayed holes in them. I used to have a pair like that when I was young. But that was because I was poor. Now you have to spend a lot of money to get a hole in your jeans. It's crazy, isn't it? Why people have to do that. And I always also remember the time I was in Melbourne once. Don't worry about fashions. You know, just do what you want to do. Because I remember going to Melbourne during the winter time, giving a series of talks there, and going from one place to another, looking through the window, I saw there was a fashion of these halter tops. You know, these low-slung jeans or skirts, and just, you know, high jumpers or whatever, leaving the whole midriff, you know, about 6 inches of bare flesh in the cold Melbourne winter. And I swear, I saw a few girls, it was blue. Those poor women, they were suffering so much because of fashion. What do you do that for? You attract a guy? Do you really need a guy? And you get freezing to get a guy? There's other ways. So in the end, sort of, you know, live simply, and then you have got a solution to your financial problems. And also, when you live simply, you have so much more peace and happiness. You feel much more secure when you don't need so much. So sometimes the materialism in society, we work so hard and wonder why we do it so hard, you know, trying to get this, trying to get that, and then money's never enough. You get a promotion at work, you get a rise in salary, and it's even more stress and still not enough money. And it goes on like that, and then you get retirement and superannuation. You find the government takes all the money from superannuation in tax. You never have enough anyway because you don't qualify. Whatever happens, there's always some loophole, and you end up sort of expected. And finally, you do save up enough for your retirement, and then you die the day before you retire. Oh, life is so difficult. So what do people do that for? So you can see what the problem is. You know, people a lot of times, you know, what is the problem? Is we put off our happiness to the future sometime. We don't know how to enjoy today. And that's a big problem for many people. Oh, I'll go and visit my old mum tomorrow. No, do it today, do it this weekend. And sometimes your mum's not there tomorrow. She's dead. You know, saying sorry to someone, you know, you've hurt. Say it today, because tomorrow might be too late, the opportunity's gone. So it's so important to realize that many of the problems in life is because, you know, we don't live in the present moment. We don't actually take advantage of life when it's actually happening. Time flies so fast when you're living in the future. When you're living in the present moment. Life is not some plan for the future. Your life is not the old memories from the past. Your life is here, right now, where you belong, in the present. which means you can enjoy these moments, which you have. And you don't need to pay any money for the present moment. That's for the future. So this is actually where you can learn how to solve problems. Sometimes when people are meditating, or they're living in a monastery, or they're trying to live life, oh, we look at all the future and all the things which might happen to us. And so often many of the problems which I thought would happen to me never happen. They always say, think of the future with negativity and fear. Just like, you know, all these aircrafts I go in, even just going to Korea. I think when I was going to Korea for this conference, I think Kim Jong-un in North Korea, he was threatening to invade or something. It was always inflaming, and it was a very, very hot time. And also there was still the end of the MERS outbreak. So many of the people, even in our monastery, were saying, Ajahn Brahm, don't go there. What would happen if Kim Jong-un invades? What would happen if you get MERS? Especially MERS. I thought, it'd be wonderful if I get sick, because then they'll put me in quarantine for 3 months, and that'll be an extra retreat for me. You always, when I look at the future, the reason I don't get afraid, I always add a positive slant to the future. In the future, people get worried about it, and I think, no, there's always something good will come out of it for the future. Okay. Here's the, yeah, if you've heard this before, hopefully, it's been 3 months since I've given a talk, so hopefully you've forgotten many of my stories. But this, no, this is one of my best ones. It's about when people say, what happens if you get blown up in an aircraft? You remember that one, the three advantages of getting blown up in an aircraft? What's the first advantage? Free cremation, yes. They're very expensive. We actually had one of our Anagarikas died in our monastery this year, found dead outside his hut. So, you know, we had to arrange for his cremation. It cost a fortune to have a cremation. We tried to get permission just to burn him in our monastery. They wouldn't do it. We got lots of wood there. Can't do that. So anyway, and it really takes a lot of work going to get all these certificates and stuff and going to the funeral directors, and the funeral directors coming to see you. Oh, it's just really a headache. That's why I told all the monks, please, next time, don't die until after the rains retreat. Don't be selfish. Now, when people die when they want to. They're very inconsiderate. But so we had to do the cremation. It costs a lot of money. If you die in an aircraft explosion, free cremation. Brilliant. What's the second advantage? Insurance, yes. You get actually money out of your loved one's death. And what's the third advantage of dying at 30,000 feet in an aircraft explosion? So close to heaven, it's easy to go the rest of the way. So when I told people stories like that, you know, it takes away your fear. Because all fear, the problem of fear, and what makes people crazy with fear and anxiety, they look at the future with a negative mind. They look at all the things, the bad things which might happen. They can't see any positivity in the bad things which might happen in the future. And that drives people crazy. I'm going to get into even bigger trouble now, climate change. The rise in ocean sea levels. If that happens, Bodhinyana Monastery on top of the hill will be a seaside resort.
I'm disgusting, terrible, aren't I? After 3 months of meditation, I haven't changed. But yeah, try and see it in a good way. Yeah, you know, many people get some displaced, there's lots of problems. But if you keep looking upon the problems, you get so negative, you get so frustrated. Again, solutions never actually arise. Look upon the future, please, with some positivity. And then it's amazing some of the solutions which come up which you wouldn't have thought about before,
When you're negative, you only look at the dark side. When you look at the dark side, that dark side grows and things get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. There's always a positive angle towards everything which happens in this world. Example, just, you know, the Second World War in Europe, when so many cities were bombed and destroyed, and that gave people a chance to rebuild. I remember in my history books, the Great Fire of London, you know, which destroyed so much of that city, gave the local governments a chance to put in a proper sewage system because all the houses were, you know, taken out, and they could actually dig a proper sewer system, which is still there today. And sometimes you see in all disasters, there's always something wonderful happens. And even, you know, with natural disasters, there's always, it brings out some of the best in human beings. And that gives hope for our world. Yes, people die, they suffer, but what's more beautiful is that people care and help, and you can see that and experience that. It makes this world look a beautiful place. So out of disasters sometimes comes the very best in human beings. So out of even the worst possibilities, there's always some beauty comes. Sometimes people, you know, who are in hospitals, sometimes they come out afterwards and they say just what beautiful care they got from the nurses and doctors. Sometimes the people with cancer, they come out and say that really taught them the meaning of life, simply because go on forever, they never realized what was valuable in this world, not the big houses and cars, but their friendships and their love and their peace inside. So sometimes we think is a problem and a disaster, when we look at it after it's happened and after it's all gone through all the difficulties, we look upon it, it's actually a blessing. So what we thought was a problem actually turns out to be something else, a great blessing, a wonderful thing which happened to us. Losing our chainsaws, losing our generator means we can get new, upgrade them. One of them was very, very old, now we can get a newer model. Whatever it is, you always look at the future with a positive mind, not a negative one, please, because otherwise you just create more problems. So what is a problem? It has to be something with a solution. If you can't find a solution to it, leave it alone until such time as the solution comes up. One of the other things which I was saying to these computer people over in Daejeon, you know, you do have problems, you know, in R&D, research and development. You have to find innovation. And so often, in innovation, you've got some problem and you keep on thinking, in such a narrow line of thought, doing things exactly the same other people do. And because of that, there's never any breakthroughs, never any innovations. You are just banging your head against the problem rather than leaving it alone until a solution arrives. One of the people who used to come here a lot, and she was a senior social worker, and Ron, you know her well, yes, right. And she came on a retreat with me some years ago, many years ago now actually. She came really late because she had big problems in the office to solve, to try and tie up the loose ends before she came on retreat. And she told me the sort of problem she had to deal with is whether she should take the children away from the mother because the mother was addicted to drugs or was violent, whether it was a danger to the children. And it's such a difficult decision to do, to divide a mother from her children. But sometimes it's in both people's best interest, but she had to make that final decision. It was her call. So it's incredibly stressful. What she did could lead to death or lead to, you know, this terrible trauma of children not having a mother. So she came and she was really stressed out. I told her just to relax and rest. And she was smart enough to follow the advice. And then during the middle of the retreat, she came up to me and she said she was not even thinking about the work because, you know, there's problems without solutions. You couldn't even think of a solution, so she just shelved it all. And then during the retreat, after meditating, all these solutions, they just bubbled up from nowhere. And she went back to her room, wrote them down, and these were brilliant solutions. These were solutions you can't force, you can't think through. These came from silence, from letting go, from making peace, not looking for a solution, but letting the solutions arise. It's so similar to that old way when you can't remember somebody's name. The more you think about it, the less chance there is of you remembering it, and then you forget. It's a problem with no solution. You leave it alone and the name just pops up all by itself. You all know that one. Why can't you apply the same technique to the problems in life where you can't find solutions? Leave them alone. Let them be. And then the answer very often comes to you. And they are great answers, really helpful. So I was telling that to all these IT engineers and software engineers in South Korea. Yes, you know, you really got to innovate. It's a cutthroat world in IT. This was Samsung, LG, Google, and a few others whose names I don't know. But you have to learn how to find solutions to these really difficult problems. And that's how you do it. Leave it alone and let the answer come to you. And that's why they really enjoyed my talk. And I got all these invitations to come to the head of EU security next time I'm in Belgium, and the guy who advises Austria on their security system in Vienna. Really good fun being a monk. But I've got no time, I have to teach here. But it's amazing just what you can do when you understand the way the mind works and understand what a problem is and what the solution is. And how we just keep forcing problems when we don't know there's a solution. There's no problem because there's no solution right now. Leave it alone. And sometimes we waste time on things which are not really problems, they're just irritations. Just little social conflicts, little stupid difficulties. No, things which are just financial difficulties for the time being. All these little things in life which we, not really problems at all, they're irritations. So please don't make too much of those. You're wasting your energy, you're wasting your happiness, you're wasting your peace. Instead, real problems. Leave them for a while and wait for the solution to come. And it always comes, but not when you want it. Thank you for listening. That was very weak, sadhus. Come on, you guys. Put some energy into it. One, two, three. Sadhu. 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 Yeah, that's better. Thank you. Welcome back. Okay, now we have question time, comment time, complaint time. Yes, at the back.
Yes, Ajahn Brahm, you mentioned in your talk about young girls exposed to their interests and stuff.
Yeah.
I wondered if there was a comparison there with monks exposed to their right shoulder.
Their right shoulder. Yes, there is, because this is where that English phrase come from, to give people the cold shoulder. That's what it is. It shows that we are vulnerable and we're cuddly. You know that some Buddhist traditions, you know, they shave their eyebrows, others don't. Actually, you're shaving your eyebrows. Other traditions don't. And somebody actually told me why. Because when a monk has got a bald head and shaved their eyebrows, they look like a helpless baby. Have a look at a baby. It means we get far more care and compassion. If you have strong eyebrows, you look a bit too much like John Howard. And too aggressive. So actually, it just makes you softer. you know, when you take your eyebrows off, interestingly. So it's great psychology to get some more people looking after you. Any other questions? Anything from overseas? If we've got questions from overseas these days? No. This was supposed to be your breakthrough. Was there a problem or was it just an irritation? It was just an irritation. So what was the problem? You'll find a solution later on. So anyway, never mind. Any comments or questions here? Okay, very good. So now we've started off again. You get rusty the first talk, but you get into it by the next talk. And again, maybe see some of you over at the Katina ceremonies. And so I always tell people, if you are free on Sunday, please go down to the next to Bodhinyana Jhana Grove. And if you are not free, please go anyway. So it's a way of sort of celebrating the end of the rains retreat. And also this where we raise funds for the next year at our monastery, where we're doing some more concreting fire breaks, building a wall, because it's a fire season. We've got to protect our buildings, you know, from fires. So that's where I'm putting a lot of the money this year into. Fortunately, it's very expensive, but you have to do it. So anyway, so that when you go to monasteries, Nuns Monastery or Bodhinyana Monastery, you won't see any fried monks. They'd all be healthy. Very good. Okay, so we can now pay respects to... You've got announcements? Or pay respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha? Very good. And then we can go. And if you have something to say, please come up. If it's just to say hi, hi, and then... Because I have to go quickly. Arahant Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami. Very good. Clock's away. Did you understand my accent? Okay. Yeah. Oh, very good. Very good. This is a Cambodian monk who's staying in the...